and I recognized all of these fears and insecurities, I realized finally that these were not me and these were not necessarily true. And I realized that, oh, not every thought you have is true. That was such a game changer. It's like, don't believe everything you think.
Have you posted about your pre-orders?
Yeah.
What's happened like?
Good. You know, I put out a couple books before this and they weren't, I didn't have much of an audience then. This is my first book with an audience. So I'm trying to treat it like my first book. So I put together like a pre-order package with like, you pre-order the book, you get all kinds of this bonus materials. I'm teaching a class on Sunday that people can go to. I'm having a bunch of different events with some of my favorite creators just to, you know, incentivize ordering it early.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. And how has having an audience changed your creativity, if at all?
Well, it's nice when people can see your art. That's interesting. And it's interesting to get feedback from people and just to have more of a relationship with your audience. You know, it's weird to be an artist or a writer or poet in the age of social media. It's kind of uncharted territory because social media is a lot more than just, you know, a place where you can just post updates. It's like, it's your art gallery. It's your publisher. It's your Rolodex. So it's interesting to be able to share things in real time and have them be received in real time and then get feedback from them. And these days, everything just happens a lot more immediately just in the world. Like you go on Twitter, Instagram, and you just can see in real time what's happening in the world. So one of the things that I like to think about is how does an artist show up? When everything is instant, you know, what's the voice of the poet in the 24/7 news cycle world that we live in? And, you know, to a degree, I'm just trying to tap into the collective and see what's needed, you know, what kind of a voice is needed, what kind of a perspective is needed? Do people need to be uplifted? Do they need to be comforted? Do they need to have a fire lit under them? And it's cool to be able to not wait for a year to publish a book, to have people see your thoughts, but to share them in real time so we can like share a moment together and process our emotions together and just live in the world together at once. So it's interesting, it's fun, it's exciting, it's stressful sometimes, but this is the world that we live in today.
So it's interesting you mentioned in your process, it's like you're tapping into the collective, which assumes that you are creating the art for the audience.
Yeah.
And so it's fascinating because one of our mutual mentors and people we really respect and admire,
yeah,
is Rick Rubin. And Rick Rubin, yeah, says for him, the audience comes last.
Yeah.
And this is what's so beautiful about creativity. There's a million ways to do it.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that because I've heard Rick Rubin on some interviews saying that. And I'm always like, does it? You know, I mean, Rick, lots of love and respect for Rick. And he's
the opening quote in your book.
He is.
Which is, that's high honor and high esteem.
He is. Yeah. You know, he comes from a music background. I think that there's definitely a time and place there's no one size fits all for any type of art. There's a time and place for different approaches. You know, if you're a musician, you're trying to find the right sound, I definitely think that looking within yourself is a better approach than trying to figure out what the audience is going to like or respond to. You know, there's different types of creativity. I think for a writer's trying to say something and words are specific. Words are precise. So what are you saying? You know, it's sometimes you want to say what you want to say. Like I believe that some of my favorite writing and some of my own writing, I'm not saying what I want to say necessarily. I'm trying to express whatever my heart is trying to purge. Mm. I'm trying to see what's trying to come out of me, what wants to be released. Because I think of creativity like a purge very often. So yes, very often I'm trying to just let whatever wants to come out of me come out. Let it be a purge. Let it be a cleanse. Almost, it's almost like a detox from your system, where like you can go in a sauna and you can sweat out all these toxins. You know, you can go to South America and drink ayahuasca and you can purge through vomiting. But I think that there's a certain aspect of purging in the creative process. So often my writing is a purge. But often I'm trying to deliver a message, you know, and that message requires an audience. And I think, you know, a lot of people that might listen to this podcast, you know, there are other creativity modules. Like you could be a teacher or a coach. And for things like this, you know, there is an audience and you're trying to provide a service. So it's kind of like, it's kind of bad advice to say audience comes last, because it's kind of like think of a business. A business is only as good as the service it provides its customers. So it has to be of service to someone. So if you're a coach, if you're a writer, if you're a teacher, your work is trying to be of service to someone. So if you're making art like music and it's entertaining and it's pure art from the soul, then I would say, yes, you know, it's best not to consider the audience. But if you're trying to deliver a message or teach something or show up in a way that you're serving an audience of some sort, I think it's smart to check in with that audience and see where they're at and see how you can be of service and what it is that is needed at that time from you with your unique talents and abilities.
That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Who do you serve right now?
Goodness, that's a good question. You know, it's always evolving. You know, I think the best artists are always evolving and their audience might change. Mm-hmm. You know, like I look at someone like David Bowie, who is always shape-shifting, and he was, you know, he would change identities and he would lose some of his audience and he would find new ones. So I'm kind of in a bit of a, I believe in the, our artists should be always in the state of becoming and never arriving. So who am I serving? You know, my audience is kind of, I would say it's on the intersection of spirituality and creativity. Mm. You know, people who are looking for spiritual insight in some way, and people who are looking to improve their own creativity or tap into their creativity or their purpose in a deeper way. So that's what I can tell just from who reaches out to me, you know? So, but I try to, with my writing, I'm trying to make things more and more simple so they can be more accessible and inclusive to more people. So it changes on a daily basis.
Take me through the origins of your own spiritual journey.
Mm-hmm. Well, like most people here in the good old United States of America, especially in the Midwest where I'm from, I grew up in Minnesota, very much in the tradition of Christianity, church every Sunday, youth groups, different Christian youth retreats, like the whole nine yards. And a lot of people who grew up really immersed in Christianity or any religion often end up a little resentful or scarred by that. And for me, I'm thankful for that part of my history, because it really gave me a solid foundation in terms of my relationship with spirit or my relationship with God. And I don't always use that word God because it's tricky and can mean a lot of things. But I think it was like when I was around high school age, I remember I was in church one Sunday and I looked around and I was like, I was like, all right, I buy this whole idea of God. I buy it. There's a creator. There's a purpose and intention behind the universe. But I don't think that God is restricted to living within the four walls of this church. You know, I think God is a much bigger idea that doesn't fit into a religion or a scripture, so to speak. So I sort of left Christianity and went on my own journey to find God. And that took on many, many twists and turns. I discovered Buddhism. I discovered meditation. I found God in the Church of Life. You know, I think there's nothing that is not God. There's nowhere you can look where God is not. So I think life is God. I think consciousness is God. And for me personally, I think creativity is a spiritual practice. So that's always where I've been most interested in expressing myself and putting my energy and time into creativity, writing, painting, you know, a lot of different things, making memes. And because I think, you know, it says in the Bible, it says that humans are created in the image of God. And that could mean different things. But when you look at what God is the creator. God is the creation. God is source creation. It's where we all come from. It's where we're all going back to. So if we're made in the image of that, it means we are creators. It means we are born to create. So I think that art is an expression of that. Like we're all little baby gods and we're practicing the game of creation. So what God does on the universal level, you know, this universe being born into existence, everything we create, including this podcast, is our own little sandbox version of that. So I think we're all born to create. I think it's human nature. And I think that tapping into that creativity and letting it move through you is an act of service to the divine and to God. So for me, creativity has become my spiritual practice.
Was there a moment where it shifted from this is just some things that I'm creating to this is a spiritual practice and devotion?
Well, I think it always was, but it's just been about me realizing it more and more.
How have you done that?
And just owning it. Just through reflecting on my own journey, my own life, you know, me looking around at religion or even like the more modern spiritual practices. There's a lot of the spiritual community here in Austin, whatever, new age, high vibe. Mm-hmm. You know, that stuff is great, but I never fully resonated with it. You know, it was never quite my thing. So I'm like, well, what is my thing? And I'm like, oh, you know, it is creativity. It is poetry. It is expression. It's being we're all lineage carriers for something. You know, we learn from the people who came before us and we carry the torch for the people that come next. So I realized that all my heroes were artists. All my heroes were poets and creators. So those are my personal gurus. You know, you can have a spiritual guru. You can have an art, a creative guru.
Yeah.
And for me, it's just different flavors of the same thing.
Yeah. So I wanted to bring out some of your gurus, so to speak, and the people you dedicated your book to, because I was very struck by the ways in which these are similar to my creative teachers as well.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a long list of them. So I want to I want to just highlight a couple that came to mind or really hit me as well. Rick Rubin, Jay-Z. This list is long. Wow. I mean, you got Taylor Swift, Terrence McKenna, Ernest Hemingway, Lana Del Rey, Seth Godin, Tyler, the Creator. I mean, this. I want to hand this list to you because I want to see what sticks out to you on this list and who might be on this list that people might not know or that really hit you.
Well, the list starts off with what I would consider my spiritual, my creative lineage. So I think that the artist that most impacted me when I was young was Allen Ginsberg, who's a poet from New York. And he really opened up my eyes to poetry as a spiritual expression, where it's not aligned with any religion. It's life itself as spiritual. It's finding the holiness in all things. So Ginsberg really opened up my eyes to that. And then I discovered that he had been influenced by these earlier poets like Walt Whitman and William Blake, and that he came from that lineage. And then after Ginsberg, Ginsberg was writing in the 1950s. And I believe that he planted seeds, the Beat Generation in general, along with Jack Kerouac and others. They planted seeds that led to the creation of the hippie movement. Because like Bob Dylan and the Beatles and people like that were super into Ginsberg.
Wow.
So there's this lineage that moves through time. You can go back to Walt Whitman in the 1800s and see the seeds that he planted that influenced Ginsberg. And then Ginsberg planted more seeds that influenced Bob Dylan, who influenced the Beatles.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? And then the world changes.
Yeah.
So you can see the impact that, you know, one artist can have, you know, when they plant the right seeds. So that's why those guys are at the top, you know, Whitman, Ginsberg, Bob Dylan. But I learned different things from so many people on this list. I've got Joan Didion here, who's a great essayist and novelist, and she taught me so much about how to write, meaning grammar, how to structure a sentence, how to end a chapter. Like it's so precise, it's so clean, it's so neat. So I feel like I always have Joan Didion over my shoulder pointing things out to make me just tweak it more. Like she's like, sometimes if you're in a yoga class, you'll have the yoga teacher will come over and help you out with your alignment to make sure your everything's aligned properly. I feel like I've got Joan Didion over my shoulder, making sure my writing is in alignment, just tweaking it, just making it a little more precise, a little more neat.
I love that.
So I learned that from her. You know, I learned Marcel Duchamp, this like artist who was part of the Dada movement, who, you know, he was really radical in that he put a urinal in an art gallery and said, that's art. And everyone's like, what? And he's like, what? So there's just like, there's an absurdist element to Dada and to Marcel Duchamp that I like quite a bit. And then there's some, like, I wanted to throw in some modern content creators who are more my peers that the meme artists or whatever, like Bunny Michael or, you know, Sahara Rose, Emma Zek, Cy Swoon, you know, people like that. So I'm agnostic when it comes to my creative religion. I pick up inspiration wherever I can find it, and just try to integrate it all in my own process. And I learn something from everyone that I come in contact with.
So beautiful. And, you know, what strikes me is like, what strikes you and the people that strike you speak to your soul and speak to what is really fascinating to you and what grips you and eventually what you'll become.
Mm-hmm.
How can people get better at really sitting with the people in their own life that are impacting them deeply?
I love the idea that the whole world is a university and we're all students. Yeah. You know, I think there's a part of my book where I talk about never graduate. Mm. Never graduate from school. Be a lifelong student. And this goes back to an idea in Zen Buddhism called beginner's mind. Because in the expert's mind, there are very few possibilities. But in the beginner's mind, there are all kinds of possibilities. So beginner's mind is about just living with curiosity and an open mind and pretending you don't know anything, you know? So you can go in any situation fresh. So for me, like, I learn from, you know, there's things you can learn from anyone, you know, because like you might be better at someone at something, but I guarantee you that that same person is better than you at something else, mm-hmm. right? So pick and choose what you learn from people, you know, accept their gifts and recognize them and just have the humility to go into any situation as an open-minded intern. You know, when an intern shows up for their first day at work, they're just like, what's going on here? They're just absorbing what's around them. And as we get older and older, our minds get more closed and more closed, and we think we know the answer. And we're like, no, but then the problem with that is you only know the old answers. Mm-hmm. And if we want to keep growing and we want to keep expanding, we want to keep learning, we want to keep pushing culture forward, we need to find new answers, because the world isn't perfect. If we really had all the answers, the world would be a better place. So there's always more to learn. So I just try to be a sponge for information. Even one of my creative practices is watching interviews on YouTube with artists.
Love that.
You know?
Me too.
And this goes back to the spiritual tradition of creativity, because like in the Vedic tradition, it's all about sitting at the foot of the master and learning from them. And I think that YouTube is a great opportunity to sit at the foot of the masters, so to speak, and hear what they have to say. So I'm always just looking up my favorite artists on YouTube and watching their interviews, you know, just to pick up whatever I can, just to see how they approach life, see what wisdom they have to offer. It's always learning, always in the act of becoming, never arriving.
Are there any particular interviews that you seem to go back to often?
Some of my favorite. Lately, I've been watching some Prince interviews. Mm. I'm from Minnesota. Prince is from Minnesota. I try to make it to Paisley Park, his studio, whenever I'm back home. So he's been a big influence on me, and I love how he approaches his craft and his message as, you know, his spiritual calling. So I learn a lot from him. I've watched quite a few David Bowie interviews, or even like Terrence McKenna. I had Terrence McKenna on that list. You know, you want to have your mind blown, just like spend some time watching Terrence McKenna lectures on YouTube. There's no shortage of mind-blowing insights that he's dropping very casually.
So special. How do you get better at having a beginner's mind other than watching interviews of people you respect creatively?
So another way to say beginner's mind would be empty mind.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to cultivate stillness within is so critical. You know, one thing I say in my new book is a mind that's too full of information has no room for inspiration.
Say that again one more time.
A mind that's too full of information has no room for inspiration. So that's what beginner's mind is about. So it's about just cultivating the soil of your own consciousness. And for me, meditation is a core practice for doing that, you know, clearing the mind. I think the mind is an amazing tool for art and for life, but I think that when I look at my own ideas and my own creative process, it begins in my body and in my emotions and in my energy, not in my thoughts, not in my head. Like, creativity is not a problem that you're solving that requires this mental strategy. You know, creativity is something that you receive. So I believe in cultivating my own intuition, you know, and letting myself be a vessel for ideas that want to come through. And if your mind is so full of clutter and chatter and worries and doubt and memories and future projections and all of this stuff, you're not going to be a clear channel for that intuition to come through you. So just meditation, spending time in nature, learning to tap into your own heart, you know, getting out of your head and getting into your heart. And I think that there's a time for the mind, you know, to edit and to figure things out and, you know, how to launch things and et cetera. But the creative process begins in the heart. It begins in your intuition. So I just try to, I call it listening to the space between my thoughts, right? So that's kind of what meditation is. You don't need to stop thinking. It's more just being still enough to tune into that empty space between them to see what's coming in through the cracks and listening rather than thinking.
It's beautiful. Were there any particular moments that you unblocked and an insecurity that you had that you recognized or that you saw allowed more love to flow through your heart?
That's an act of constant refinement. You know, it's like that is such a ongoing subtle practice to tune into the heart, you know, and it's it can change on a daily basis. Like you might be, even tomorrow, I might have a day where I'm just totally like cut off from my heart and too much in my mind. You never know. Like if I'm drinking too much coffee and I'm in too much of a hurry and I'm just, you can forget. Mm-hmm. It's easy to forget. So it's a daily practice to tune back in. So I'm just doing little tweaks right now, like spending more time in nature, like drinking more cacao and less coffee, things like that. Reading poetry again, you know, things like that, that just help just connect you with that, the subtle nature of life rather than the, you know, the sharp edges that come with the mind. So practices like that have helped. And I think that when I initially discovered yoga and meditation were my first breakthroughs in that regard.
You mentioned you're starting to read poetry again. Was there a particular time when you were like, I'm not reading poetry anymore? Or was it unconscious? How was that relationship with poetry like?
Yeah, I mean, I read less than I used to, frankly. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I'm alone in that. I think there's so much that demands our attention these days, and there's so many other forms of stimulation that I just don't read as much as I used to. I'm listening to podcasts. I'm listening to music. I'm watching YouTube videos. I'm doing other things to, you know, learn and tap in, et cetera. But there's something about reading that it's just you and the words, you know, and it cultivates an openness and a focus and an intimacy. So it wasn't anything that I didn't want to read it. It's just that it kind of it fell off. And also, I just haven't been writing that much poetry anymore because I've been writing nonfiction, been writing my book. I've been creating curriculum for classes that I'm teaching. So I just haven't been in that poetry world, both as a reader or as a writer. But now that I'm kind of returning to it, it feels good. And I feel like that's always my home base, you know, no matter what I'm doing, whether I'm making memes, I'm teaching classes, I'm giving talks, I'm writing nonfiction, poetry is always my home base.
Wow.
So that's just what I am in my soul. You know, like I do lots of, even my memes that I create, I feel like they are a modern form of poetry. You know, and even if I'm writing nonfiction, I try to write it in a way that's poetic. So I just feel like poetry is the language that comes most naturally to me. It was my first love when it comes to creativity. So I think that's going to be something that always stays with me. So now I'm just like, well, in this age of Instagram and social media and memes, how can I modernize poetry to be relevant for the world that we live in? And that's what I try to do on Instagram.
Was there any particular time when you felt yourself like the world doesn't value poetry to the level that I do?
Yeah, every day.
Still do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What's that experience like of appreciating something so clearly, but other people don't seem to recognize it in the same form that you do?
Yeah. You know, it's more than just like appreciating poetry. It's like, I think poetry is, it can be a revolutionary thing, because I see it in a bigger context. I look at language. Let's just look at language in general. There's a spectrum that language exists on, and that spectrum is between poetry and dogma.
Mm.
All right, I'll try to break that down. Dogma is this like super literal, super logical, linear way of thinking that's very dogmatic, very mathematical. And, you know, I think that most religions began as poetry, as mythology. You know, if you look at most religions, it's storytelling. It's insight that people would have. And then over time, it becomes dogma. So I look at the world today, you turn on the news, right? Left versus right, you know, all of this divisive, combative language. And
it would be really interesting to see what the news would look like if it was poetry.
Yeah, because I think we're trapped in this game of argumentative absolutes, right? Like everyone's like butting heads against each other because of their reliance on this over literal use of language. And I think if you look at mythology, it's a way of seeing the world through the lens of metaphor. So, right. So poetry is the language of metaphor. Poetry is the language of subtlety. Poetry is the language of nuance. So those are things that we're lacking in the public discourse: subtlety, nuance, metaphor. Because I think that the truth, there's this great line in my favorite book called The Tao Te Ching. It says, "The Tao that can be named is not the true Tao." Mm-hmm. And you could say like the God that can be labeled is not the true God, right? Because as soon as you label something, it's wrong. So we think, we use these words and we think that they're so definitive and so final and so absolute. But I think that the real truth, to tap into a deeper truth, it's, you can only point to it. You can only, words are just symbols. They're not the real thing. So that's why I think is the importance of poetry, is not just because it's like, it's pretty and, you know, it's fun to read, but there's actually like a revolutionary way of thinking that comes with poetry that the world is missing today.
Mm. And what's your experience of appreciating this and loving this and understanding this, and it seemingly doesn't get the same recognition? What's that experience like for you?
Yeah, I mean, there are moments I've had with poetry that my mind has been blown. I guess you get used to it as an artist. You know, I think there's something inherent in being an artist that is synonymous with being an outsider.
Hmm.
You know, I think that artists are often the visionaries who don't fit in, that are maybe the black sheep in their community or their family, and they turn to art as a way to feel seen. You know, whether that's listening to music and like, oh, this person gets me better than anyone in my life gets me, right? I think so many of us have felt that, like the right lyric can come along and it hits you, and even though you've never met this person and never will, you're like, man, they see me. And I've had that experience with poetry, with music, with books. So, and I know how much that's meant to me to feel that connection to someone that I've never met, maybe to someone that's been dead for 100 years, right? But that's the power of art. That's the power of music. That's the power of poetry. And that, and for me, that inspires me to create, because it's just, think if I could write a line that makes someone feel less alone, what greater calling is there than that? So I think artists are just, we get used to being outsiders, you know, or somewhat introverted and sensitive by nature. So, you know, we have to find each other, and we communicate to each other through our art. You know, I think that art in a way is it's a language that introverts use to communicate with each other.
That's fascinating. I've never thought about that concept before.
Yeah.
And so what's it like now on the other side of that, to some extent, of people looking at your art and saying to you, this makes me feel seen?
I mean, that's a blessing. That's what every, that's why you do it, you know, just to make those connections. It's special. It's touching. It makes it, again, just knowing that how art has impacted me, and then to be a torch carrier for that lineage. And then to affect others and hopefully to inspire others. I don't think there's any greater blessing in life than to do that.
Yeah. Are there any particular comments or feedback that you've gotten that have really hit you and stay with you to this day?
That's interesting. I mean, these days with Instagram comments, it's all a blur. Like nothing comes to mind, you know. Yeah. I learn from my comments that I get, you know, I get negative comments too, and I accept those and I integrate those. And I think there's different types of negative comments. You know, there are people that are just mean, and you know, they're being rude, and that stuff I try to ignore. But there have been people who be like, actually, you know, have you thought about this, or this is wrong in this way? And I appreciate constructive criticism because it helps me. This goes back to the audience doesn't come last, because I listen to other people's, how they react to something I wrote, and that helps open my perspective. It's like, you know, I never considered that perspective. So it helps me refine my writing and become even more inclusive, because I'm like, oh, I never thought of it like that. So I just try to integrate whatever comes through, and I love to hear. We all have I think that everyone in the world has a different perspective. It's like I think of it like a disco ball. Think of a disco ball, and there's a bunch of tiny little mirrors on the disco ball. I think that every single person on earth and every perspective on earth is just one of those slivers of the disco ball. And it is in the totality of that disco ball that is all of consciousness, that is humanity. And that is, and that's what God really is every perspective at once. So I try my best to be open to other perspectives, and whether I agree or not, I like to acknowledge them and see where people are coming from, because I think as an artist, you don't want to close yourself off. I think you want to stay open, and I'm always open to perspectives that are not my own. And I think it's important to remain open and to listen and to be compassionate and empathetic for. And that doesn't mean compromising your art. It just means taking it into consideration. You know, because a lot of people will say things and they don't mean it to be hurtful, but they're not using their words wisely. So I think the better you understand how it's landing with people, you can show up in a way that's going to be even more impactful.
How do you determine what is constructive versus what is hateful?
I mean, it's usually just in the energy that someone's coming at it with.
Yeah.
Some people are just like, they're just insulting. They're just like literally just flinging insults at you.
Right.
And it's usually based on a misinterpretation. But even that's helpful, because if I write something and I share it on Instagram and it was misinterpreted by enough people, that's not their fault. That's my fault. So this goes back to considering the audience. As a writer, I think you have to do that, because you don't want your words to be misunderstood. So like, oh, if you, how can you rewrite it to make it so it's not as open to be misunderstood, and not opening yourself up to that, oh, they thought I meant something else and that's not what I meant at all. But with a couple tweaks, you could have cleaned that up.
Yeah. How do you think about it where, because your writing is for the consciousness of the present moment to some extent, the words will change as time goes on.
Yeah.
How do you think about that and deal with that? Especially, you've had a book out 2017. I'm sure some of the words you wrote then are different and can be perceived different even in 7 years.
Absolutely. Yeah. I wish I could go back and rewrite that book, to be honest.
You can. You could do an updated edition.
I can.
I might. You could do whatever you want, baby.
Yeah. I mean, it's the climate of the world affects so much, and what matters to people, what's on people's minds, you know? Like back in 2017, when I wrote that book, I was struggling with my own ego. Like, I was living in New York City, and I was working in the advertising industry, and I was busy, busy, busy. And I was dealing with my own mental turmoil, you know, my own intrusive thoughts.
Like what? What'd those look like?
No, just like the competitive nature of being in New York, the competitive nature of advertising, the hustle mentality. You know, you're working all day and then you're going out to the bars and drinking at night. And it's just, in a way, I love New York City. I love New York City. But in a way, it's kind of like ego on overdrive. Like, everyone's in a hurry. Everyone's rushing to get ahead, both on the street and in their careers or in the dating scene. It's a hyper-masculine, hyper-aggressive, egocentric place, which ironically is where I discovered my mindfulness practice, because I needed something to counterbalance all of the chaos around me, right? So that's when I ended up getting into meditation and Kundalini yoga, because I needed the inner balance to make up for the external chaos. So I was writing, that's where the place I was writing from. And I think, you know, God, this is, you know, pre-COVID, you know, COVID changed so much. In the post-COVID world, people have really reprioritized what matters for them. And, you know, hustling to move up the corporate ladder isn't as relevant as it used to be. You know, now people are recognizing how important it is to rest, to, you know, the importance of self-care, the importance of regulating your nervous system, the importance of slowing down and being more in touch with yourself. So I think this is an awakening that's happened for a lot of us. You know, so I've changed, and also the world has changed. So I think it's important for artists just to be aware of where's the pulse of culture, you know, what's happening, what is our shared experience, you know, in what ways are we growing together? You know, look at the ways that just these big moments affect the collective consciousness, whether that's the Trump administration or COVID or, you know, different wars that might be happening. There's so many things that affect us all. So it's just about being mindful of it all. And, you know, a message that I would have shared in 2017 is not the same message that I would share in 2023, because I'm growing and the world around me is changing. So it's about being fluid and attentive to the moment.
How are we supposed to reconcile all of the world's problems now that we have access to them?
Oh my goodness. That's a problem. We cannot reconcile all the world's problems. You know, I wish we could solve every problem through social media content. We can't do it. You know, I don't have a good answer for you, because it's we're moving into uncharted territory as a civilization. You know, things are speeding up very quickly. One thing I love that Terence McKenna said, he would talk about how civilization was speeding up faster and faster and faster. So much so that if you look at one day today, one day on Earth today, more stuff happens, more information is produced in one day than took place over the course of a million years, a billion years ago. Hmm. So it is, we're moving to this place of hyper acceleration. And nowhere is that more evident than it is with AI. Mm. You know, this is 2023, and in some ways this has been the year of AI with ChatGPT and things like that. AI is now an everyday part of many of our lives. Mm-hmm. And it's just the beginning. Mm-hmm. So we're living in a world of increasing novelty and increasing absurdity and change and acceleration, and it's so not easy. And
what if it was? What would that look like?
If it was easy?
Yeah.
Well, you know, things tend to get easier when you let go. Mm. Right? So it's not easy to do that all the time, right? Especially, you know, again, like you just go on social media and you just see chaos and you see pain and you see horrific events happening around the world. And it's so hard to let go of your desire to control all of that. Mm. You know, it sucks to see people in pain and not be able to help them. So we're in a position where we want to show up for the people in need. We want to be of service to the world. But at the same time, the world's not going back to what it used to be, right? So I think that embracing change rather than resisting it, you know, I think that a breakthrough often looks like a breakdown in the moment, right? When the caterpillar crawls into the cocoon, it looks like death. Because that caterpillar, it literally melts down into a substance that's, ironically, it's called imaginal goo. Hmm. Which is a great, because it's like in the imagination, anything is possible. Hmm. And it is only after it has melted down in this dark cocoon, isolated away in seclusion, that it can then reemerge as a butterfly. So I think that every breakthrough in the moment resembles a breakdown. So my hope and my prayer for humanity during this intense period in our collective journey is that we can emerge from this as butterflies and be willing to change and to become someone new.
Wow. Yeah. You know what I just realized from talking to you just now is it's not, when we call it a breakup, yeah, when you're breaking up with someone, your consciousness in many respects is going up and it's going to a new place.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
And like when you think about breakup or breakdown, they're both breakthroughs, yeah, to a new place.
Yeah. Completely. Yeah. I mean, something needs to fall apart in order to be reconfigured in a new way. So, you know, life is change, life is transition, and, you know, things need to dissolve in some way to give us the freedom and the opportunity to, you know, become a new version of ourselves or a new version of the world. And I think we all would be happy to see a new version of the world. So I see it as an opportunity. You know, it's no mistake that the Chinese word for crisis and opportunity is the same word, because I think every crisis is an opportunity, and it's uncomfortable to the ego to deal with that, the breakdown, the crisis moment. But I can say in my own life, it's always been on the precipice of transformation. So I try to embrace that as much as I can.
Yeah. Well, what's been the biggest breakdown in your life that led to a breakthrough?
Yeah, honestly, so when I grew up in Minnesota, you know, in a small town, but I always wanted to live in New York City. I always just had that vision in the back of my mind. That's where all my favorite artists lived. And I'd never been there, but I wanted to live there. And in my late 20s, I finally moved there and I quit my job and sold all my stuff and took the little money I had and moved to New York. And it was harder than I expected it to be to like, get a job, to like get settled. You know, I was struggling. And then Hurricane Sandy, this is 2012, Hurricane Sandy hit New York City and it destroyed my apartment. Wow. So I was already like struggling to make ends meet, struggling to like get settled in New York. And now I'm homeless after a hurricane. So my buddy who also lost his apartment, he had a friend with this empty cottage in the Caribbean in this little island called Culebra. And he's like, let's just go live in this little cottage for a while. And I had nowhere else to go. I didn't want to go back home and live with my parents in Minnesota. So I'm like, let's do it. So we took the last of my money, bought a one-way JetBlue ticket to Puerto Rico, transferred to this little rinky-dink two-passenger plane to get to Culebra, and pretty much proceeded to have a nervous breakdown.
Over what?
You know, because I just felt like such a failure. I felt like, oh, I tried to move to New York. I thought that the universe would support me. I took this leap of faith, and instead I'm homeless and unemployed and broke on this little island in the Caribbean.
Yeah, that's one way to look at the story.
Yeah.
I've many questions, but what would the current version of you tell that version of, because there's a version of that person right now listening to this podcast,
yeah,
who just is going to an island in the middle of nowhere and thinking they lost life for some reason.
Yeah.
What would you tell that person now?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what happened to me is that it ended up being my biggest breakthrough. And the reason that is because I had nothing to do other than sit on the beach and watch the tide come in and out every day. So it was like this state of prolonged meditation. And only then could my mind really settle down. And I recognized all of these fears and insecurities. I realized finally that these were not me and these were not necessarily true. And I realized that, oh, not every thought you have is true. That was such a game changer. It's like, don't believe everything you think, like literally. And then that's when I recognized that, oh, this is just the voice of my ego. This is just mental chatter. This isn't real. And I don't have to listen to this voice. And only then when I quieted my mind by watching the tide come in and out every day, did I start to tune into this quieter voice of my own intuition and recognize that like, oh, I can listen to my intuition, which is like a soft, quiet feeling, or I can get caught up in my own mental chaos. And it was in that moment that I had this idea for my first book. And I was like, oh, this is going to be called Shit Your Ego Says. It's going to be my first book. And I just knew with certainty that it was going to be my first published book. And it was. So what looked like the worst thing that ever happened to me ended up being the best thing that ever happened to me, because that's what launched my career as an author.
Wow.
Yeah.
What about your life changed when you recognized the mental chatter for the first time?
The biggest change for me was learning to be comfortable with uncertainty. Because for me, that moment was a moment of great uncertainty. Like, I don't have a place to live. I'm crashing at this empty cottage in this little island. I didn't know what I would do next. It was like complete uncertainty. And the mind wants to, that's where worry comes from. I think that worry is like a form of suppressed imagination.
Worry is a form of suppressed imagination. Yeah.
I think that because I think imagination is natural. And I think that we all imagination is just like a sixth sense that we all have. But when we suppress that and we don't allow ourselves to be creative and to imagine, that's when your imagination is going to manifest in a dark form as worry, where you're imagining all these scenarios. So my mind it's always trying to jump to conclusions just to find some semblance of certainty. So I think worry is the mind's way of trying to grasp onto certainty, even if it's a bad certainty. So for me, honestly, it was learning about not trying to think your way out of uncertainty, but to lean into the uncertainty and to find comfort in the uncertainty. And the only way to do that is with surrender and with trust. Like, I learned to dig deep within myself to find trust, even when rationally I shouldn't have it. I should be trying to figure my way through this, solve the problem that I'm in. But no, just surrender. Surrender to the uncertainty and trust it and feel your way through. And that was such a game-changing lesson that I had.
Wow. Well, it speaks to the power of poetry. That mm-hmm. sounds like poetry, as opposed to the dogma
totally.
That we've been given.
Totally. I agree.
You had a Krishnamurti quote that I got to read
yeah.
on this topic that is so profound. And you highlighted it by saying, the mind rebels against the unknown. So it moves from the known to the known, from habit to habit, from pattern to pattern. Such a mind never abandons the known to discover the unknown.
Yeah, I think that's one of my favorite lessons is you need to let go of the small known in order to venture off into the greater unknown. And for me, that's what growth is. I think surrender is a potent portal for growth, because you need to surrender the known. Like, what is your, how do you get a bigger comfort zone? You leave your comfort zone.
Hmm.
It's like that's how do you get a bigger comfort zone? You step out of your comfort zone. Guess what's outside of your comfort zone? Discomfort.
Yeah.
The unknown.
Yeah.
It's you're embarking on an adventure. And I think this is just such a vital thing in my life, you know, growing up in a small town, moving to New York City, you know, moving to LA, like changing industries, changing careers. Life's an adventure, and it's the hero's journey. You know, the hero before embarking on the hero's journey, the first step is leaving the known world. It's leaving the familiarity of their comfort zone and embarking into the unknown. But what happens when you embark into the unknown? You get to know it.
Mm-hmm.
It no longer is unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And what was uncomfortable becomes comfortable. So suddenly you have a bigger comfort zone, and suddenly you're comfortable in the unknown because now you know it. So already you have a wider playing field to exist in. And then it gives you the confidence to know that you did it once, you can do it again. You know, even now, we're always on the precipice of the unknown. No matter who we are, there's always more unknown. There's always more area outside your comfort zone. But once you've stepped out of it, even in a little bit, you can just tiptoe outside of it. You know, you don't have to take big risks in your life if you don't want to, but just even tiptoeing outside your comfort zone, you'll get a little bit more familiar and you'll realize that it's safe to explore. So that's been a huge lesson in my life.
Well, and it's funny that you talk about that. You could talk about that from the macro, but the micro, every time you sit down to write, you are going from the known of this moment to the unknown of what's going to happen. So what are the preparations that you do when you are going from the known to the unknown in the micro of, one might call it, creating art?
I love that observation. You're absolutely right. The creative process is a journey into the unknown, 100%. And it's only exciting if that's what it is. Otherwise, you're just
dogma.
It's a formulaic and it's boring.
Yeah.
If you're just writing the same thing over and over again, it's like we all have seen a band or a musician that was like, that was just awesome and inspiring. And then after a couple of hits, they just started to repeat the same formula and then it becomes boring and then they quickly fade out of relevance because they're just repeating the same thing. So I love the idea of art as exploration. And I'm only interested in something if it's something that I feel like I'm stumbling upon. Hmm. You know, that's why like making memes for me was a whole new territory. And even now I'm like, well, now there's memes everywhere. I feel like everyone's making memes now. So now I'm like, I'm not even going to make memes anymore. I'm just going to do the text with no picture. And I'm going to try to make the caption fire enough where I don't even need the picture. You know, like a minimal meme. So I'm always just trying to challenge myself and stay engaged, stay interested in what I'm doing. Because if it's not exciting for me, it's not going to be exciting for the audience. So for me, it's just, I start my creative process, my writing process each morning with meditation. And then I pretty much just have like an open notebook and I play some instrumental music. I maybe have a candle lit.
Any particular favorite for the instrumental music?
Every single year, my Spotify Wrapped, my number one artist is Sigur Rós.
And how do you spell that?
Sigur Rós. And they have an album that's, it's called literally the parentheses symbols. Like it's called the parentheses symbols. And I just play that every morning to write. So that's my go-to. Although the new Andre 3000 flute album has got some play.
I love that.
Lately as well. But I really just try to, I feel like artists are explorers of consciousness.
Yes.
It's like at one point people were exploring the world, right? Like people would venture off and go on these expeditions and explore the world. And it's like, we've kind of explored the world as much as we can.
The physical landscape.
But creativity is the art of traversing the unknown realms of consciousness.
Wow.
That's one thing that the writer William Burroughs said, is he saw himself as an explorer of new territories. And he had no interest in documenting territory that's already been explored. So he would develop these crazy, innovative, experimental techniques for his writing just to explore new territory. So for me, I start with emotion, you know, and I just try to see how I'm feeling and how I feel the whole world is feeling right now. And I just try to tune into that and sit with it. And when I sit with it long enough, eventually like an insight will bubble up and then words might bubble up from that insight. So for me, it's about just sitting with my feelings long enough until the words sort of just unfold naturally. So I'm not forcing what I'm saying. I'm letting them gradually come into focus, starting with feeling. And that feeling eventually becomes a thought, and that eventually becomes words. So I try to have it be this organic, spontaneous process. So I don't really know what's going to come out. I'm kind of letting myself be a vessel and an antenna for the muse, whatever that means.
Dude, I realize what I'm doing. 441 episodes in. I realize what we're doing here. I'm interviewing the new explorers. Wow. Thank you.
Yeah, and you're a guide on the journey. You know, you're not just interviewing the explorers. You are guiding that exploration by asking questions. Because I don't know what I'm going to say. That's what's great about a podcast. Like, this is so spontaneous. This is jazz. You know, I don't know what you're going to say. You don't know what I'm going to say. We are exploring together. So you're prompting my own exploration. And then I don't know what's going to come out. So yeah, it's a great co-creation.
I'm so grateful for you, and I'm so grateful for this co-creation. What inspired you to write another book?
Just what I said about tuning into what was trying to come through. Actually, I worked in the advertising industry for a long time. My last job in advertising, I was running a branding department inside of a big marketing agency. And the whole agency was acquired by this big technology company, and they just wanted it for the technology capabilities. They didn't want to do branding. So they dissolved the whole branding department, and I was let go. And this was another initiation into the unknown, because I've always had jobs. You know, since I was little, I worked in grocery stores. I worked at Walmart. I worked in cornfields back in Minnesota.
Wow.
You know, I've always had jobs. And, you know, I was let go from my job, and I did not want another job because I had already published my first book. You know, people are starting to know me for my memes. So I'm like, all right, this is, again, time to lean into the uncertainty. So I'm not going to try to find another job. I'm going to lean into the uncertainty and see what's trying to come through. So I would just sit down in the morning and meditate and be like, God, spirit, source, what's trying to come through me? This is an opportunity for me to be of service to you. So tell me what to do. And I just really sat with that feeling, and I didn't know what it was.
How often did you do this?
Just in the morning, usually. I find meditation most potent in the morning before the distractions of the day come along. Once you start having meetings and having meals and walking the dogs, you know, you're kind of distracted.
And how long for the meditation, roughly?
You know, I only meditate for like 10, 15 minutes. But even after that, when I'm in that writing zone with the open notebook and the Sigur Rós playing, it's not meditation in a formal sense, but it is meditative, right? So I'm in that zone for hours.
Gotcha.
I don't book anything in the morning. I try to save my whole morning just to be in that meditative writing zone, mm-hmm. right? And I don't measure my own creative output by the quantity of what I produce. I just try to show up. And if I have one idea all morning, that's what I have. You know, I don't put a word count on it. It's, for me, it's more just like in baseball, you know, the more times at bat that you have, the better chances you're going to have to hit a home run. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to hit a home run every single at bat, but the more at bats that you do, you're optimizing your chances. So I do that every morning. I don't care what comes through. You know, it might be one idea, it might be five ideas, but I still carve out that space. And it was in doing that this book came through. And what came through initially was this idea of the yin and the yang of creativity. Because I'm like, what is creativity? I'm like, this formula for a creativity is trying to come through me. And it was like, oh, there. It's like creativity on one hand, it's very spiritual, right? Because you've got this intuition, and you've got things like intention and purpose, and you've even got like, you know, consuming art and like being inspired by others and finding your own creative influences and creative lineage. And I was like, oh, these are all like creative yin. It's like, this is the feminine spiritual parts of creativity, which are essential. But there's also the doing. There's like developing your own style and crafting your work and executing and launching and making and putting it out into the world. And I'm like, oh, these are all yang. These are the masculine doing aspects of creativity. So I was like, oh, there's a yin and the yang of creativity. And I started to sketch out the different steps that were in each one. And I didn't know it was a book yet. I was just kind of exploring the idea, but that turned out to be the blueprint for the book.
At what point do you realize it's a book?
I don't remember. You know, that's my go-to. I love writing books. I love writing books because for me, it's just a fun format to play around with. My books are very visual. My books are full of illustrations and memes. So it's fun just to have like, oh, I've got 200 pages to play with here.
Yeah.
So for me, books are kind of my go-to default of like my, a big idea, coming through. I try to write a book out of it if I can.
The book that you sent me was so uniquely you too.
Oh, thank you.
Like you could never, no one else could have created that.
Thank you.
And that is like a sign that it's not dogma. That it literally comes through as poetry. The fact that totally. This is a creative act of just you. Like yeah. someone could show me that and be like, oh, that's James.
Thanks.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, because I, you know, I'm a designer and a writer. And not, you know, I think that's rare. Like I went to college for design. Mm. You know, I used to work professionally as a graphic designer. Mm. You know, I make memes. So like the visual art component is really critical to what I do. So I made all the illustrations in the book. And yeah, I think that really, actually, it's funny. I took a road trip to Nashville and all of the illustrations I created during that road trip.
Wow. What about that road trip?
I don't know. I was in hotels and in Airbnbs and, I think I'm a big believer in like, disrupting routine. I think when you introduce an element of randomness, it's kind of a cheat code to break out of the linear cause and effect of our total of our normal lives. So that's just like a creative cheat code for anyone that feels maybe stuck or stagnant. Do something random, like take a trip to a city you've never been to before with no agenda, or even just like go explore different coffee shops in your hometown and be a tourist in your own city, or like start listening to a genre of music that you've never listened to before. Just do something random, just like break routine. I have the quote in one of my books. It's in case of emergency, break routine. And it's like, so I think on that road trip, it's kind of beginner's mind too. It's like, oh, I'm staying in a cabin in Little Rock, Arkansas. It's like, when you look around you and everything's familiar, I think you're a little bit of going through the motions, but when you're like uncomfortable and you're in a new environment, you find different places within yourself to pull from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really well said. I'm so excited for this book's release because I see the ways in which what you've done has come through you and it's going to help so many people. And I'm so grateful that I get to witness the creation before it goes out into the world, then it becomes its own creation again. So thank you for sharing it with me. Thank you for sharing your presence with me here today. I'm really, really grateful for it. And I like to end these podcasts by asking the guests for a challenge. A challenge points to the place in your heart you believe the audience or someone listening should take this conversation and actually do something with it. What's a challenge that comes to mind?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. This is a great conversation. I appreciate the invite and it's been great to meet you and to drop in with you. So this is a challenge for listeners to, mm-hmm. in their own life. Mm-hmm. Challenge. I'm challenging you guys. You know, I think that getting more in touch with the inner child, that's what's coming through. And that's an important thing for creativity. I think your creativity is only as potent as the aliveness of your own inner child. So I would challenge you to examine your own life and all the ways that the inner child is being suppressed. In what ways are you being too serious with your life? And how can you just like let go and introduce more playfulness, more curiosity, more wonder, and really to let that inner child out to play and see what happens? That's a good place to start.
That's a wonderful, wonderful challenge. Where should we send people to connect with you further?
My Instagram is Words Are Vibrations. And if you go to the link in my bio, you can pre-order my book. I will say if you pre-order, you're going to get all kinds of extra bonus goodies, including some live events and some classes that I'm going to be teaching. So everything is in the link in my bio on Instagram.
And what an incredible handle as well. Like the greatest handle.
So thanks, bro.
Check this man out. Incredible artist. Changing consciousness on a day-to-day basis. I appreciate you so much. Sky King, you're the man for the introduction.
Shout out Sky King.
And until next time.
Peace.